You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planning. If you're looking to take your next strategic step towards multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com has a new look, a new host, and new resources. Take a minute and check out the Church Planning Masterclass with lessons from leaders like Matt Chandler, D.A. Horton, Trillia Newbell, and more at newchurches.com.
Hey, welcome back. Episode 640 of the New Churches Podcast. And we are glad to have as our guest today, Michael Crawford. I'm going to give you more about him in just a moment. Let me remind you that the New Churches Podcast is a gift to church planters to help them to be more effective in church planting leadership and more. We recognize that we are blessed to steward the most listened to church planting podcast in the world. And we take it seriously. So we try to bring you a variety of guests on different topics, all kind of clustered around the idea of church planting. So if that's helpful to you, if you would mind, leave a review, leave a comment, wherever you download your podcast, we would appreciate it. Today on the New Churches Podcast, my guest is Michael Crawford. He leads church planting for the Send Network for Maryland and Delaware, and specifically engaged city of Baltimore and also throughout the region. He's a veteran church planter himself, multiplying church pastor, if I can learn to speak, strong advocate for planters and their families, originally from LA, pastor in California before moving to Baltimore to plant Freedom Church. He's a triathlete. That right there rules out any further conversation with me. But one thing I can relate to, not the triathlete part, he's an author, and you might want to check out his book, Don't Plant, Be Planted, A Contrarian's Guide to Starting a Church. Michael, thanks for joining us here on the podcast.
Always a pleasure.
All right, good. We're going to talk about leadership multiplication in church planning, but I need you to tell me a little more about Don't Plant, Be Planted, A Contrarian's Guide to Starting a Church. Are you a contrarian, and how does that come through in the book? Tell me.
Well, it's a bunch of ideas thrown on the wall, and so the chapters are kind of anywhere from 1,000 words to 500 words. My shortest chapter is extremely short. It's if you can't preach, don't plant. Next chapter.
Really? So that was it.
Yeah, that was it. Okay. So we address topics that sometimes aren't commonly addressed in church planting. Mm-hmm. And from a kind of a different point of view, biblical, but different.
Yeah.
And so that's why I say it's kind of contrarian.
Yeah, well, first, let me just say we're allowed to have different points of view here on the New Churches Podcast. We set a broad table, and so lots of good conversations will flow for that. So let me ask some questions to kind of walk through some of these things. So you're overseeing church planting, helping church planters. You yourself planted Freedom Church, but now you're working and overseeing and engaging more. And particularly in the area of becoming better at leadership development. It seems that work starts with some clear definitions, and leadership development pathways. Give us some ways you think your definitions, your explanations of leadership development and leadership development for church planters.
Yeah, you know, I used to think of a leader as a position. And I think all of us know that positions don't mean you're a leader. In fact, you probably know too, Ed, that sometimes you deal with churches and the most influential person in the church doesn't have a position.
Yeah.
But they are the leader. So it forced me to go back and redefine what a leader is. I think a leader is a person with a presence that influences others so they become followers. Mm. A leader is a person with a presence that influences others so that they become followers. I think this is more in comport with the scriptures, mm-hmm, because you can have male and female leaders. You can have people with positions, no positions. And this explains, for example, like in Acts 20, where Paul says, now, after I leave, people are going to rise from among your own selves and they're going to draw away people. Right. And so it really gives the idea that, yeah, leaders are just people who have influence over other people. And I think if we have that as a broad category, we can begin to look at those people and say, well, then how do I care for them? How do I equip them? How do I mobilize them? How do I position them in places where God wants them to be so that they can take responsibilities for the things that God wants them to take responsibilities for?
Fascinating. Okay, good. So this is something you've obviously thought deeply about, which I like. And because one of the things that happens is it seems that in a lot of church plants, there's maybe the leader, right? The lead pastor, the lead planter, who maybe focuses on personal leadership development, maybe, you know, depending upon the path that person took, might be formal, might be informal. But it seems that leadership development sometimes stops with, I went to Bible college, or I went to seminary, or I did some sort of informal training. Leadership development is broader than that. What do you think planters need to understand about leadership development that maybe they don't? What advice would you give?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like that Ephesians 4:11-12 paradigm where Christ ascends, gives gifts, and he just doesn't give gifts to pastors or planters.
Right.
He gives gifts to everybody, 1 Corinthians 12. So the job of the pastor is to help people identify those gifts, discern them, and to develop those gifts. That's broad. You know what's interesting? Just in my 20 years of church planting, isn't it odd that sometimes we'll send a person out to plant a church and then the call comes back, I need someone to do kids. Yeah. I need someone to do this. What they're really saying is, I need a leader for this. I need a leader for that. That's kind of indicative of how sometimes our paradigm of leadership development is truncated. It's a little too small.
Fascinating.
And to be healthy, we need it to be bigger.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I do think that leadership issues are organizational issues. And that's part you're talking, you know, I need a kids leader. Well, no, you need a leader. You need a kids minister. Yes. You need a leader. And so I think sometimes we're kind of in a season right now. Maybe I'm wrong, but we're kind of in an anti-leader season. You know, this swings back and forth. When I, you know, planted my first church in the late 80s, leaders were everything. Now leaders, I don't know, people question everything about leadership, and with some reasons to do so. So how do we create a culture that that creates a additional number of leaders? What does a leadership developing culture look like?
Yeah, that's great. And there's a few things bottled up in that. I think the problem isn't with leadership, it's with unsanctified leaders.
Oh, good.
So I define leadership development as the process of sanctifying a leader's presence and positioning them to be responsible for something in an effective way. So the emphasis is on sanctifying their presence. The emphasis is on sanctification because, you know, the stories we're hearing now on podcasts, predominantly they're salacious, but they're of at least leaders in seasons of an unsanctified life. And so leadership development, we want to develop people's character, but we experience people's character. So I like to say, Ed, that the two most important questions that a leader can ask and answer is, one, am I aware of how I lead? And two, am I aware of what people experience when I lead them? Mm. Because if we just train people to fill positions, we're going to continue with the monotony that we've been experiencing. And so I think a better view of leadership development is, hey, I want to train people so that when they go out and serve people and help people, people experience a little bit more of Jesus than they will of their carnality. And that's a little bit of a different approach than here's a skill set, here's a budget, here's a spreadsheet, here's a calendar. Mm. Go.
That's good. That's good. I'm interested to drill down a little bit more on this because one of the things that I've observed, and I'm guessing if your experience has been familiar, but you planted in Baltimore, I planted in Buffalo. Inner city of Buffalo among the urban poor is where I planted. And it seemed that most of the people who had leadership capabilities got out of the neighborhood that we were in. If they had some, you know, intrinsic or some learned leadership capacity, they got a better job and got out of the neighborhood where we were. So we were kind of, it's at least in our experience, I mean, yours may be different. Baltimore is also a city that's had a lot of flight, white flight, brain drain, and more, not dissimilar from Buffalo. And I don't know the neighborhood you planted in, but how has that been in when you work with church planters in more urban contexts? And, you know, I guess it also, too, there's probably cultural and racial impacts in those conversations as well. But what's been your observation to the available leadership pool depending upon the cultural and economic situation in the community? Am I nuts or is there something going on here?
No, you have hit something that I think needs to be discussed more. Because as you know, sometimes in Christendom, in the broader kingdom, we fund goals and not strategy. Mm. And what you're talking now is about strategy. Yeah. You're talking about what happens when you go into a community and you raise up a leader. And now that leader is able, they're more astute. You've added to their, you know, not only their character and their presence, their prowess, their ability to earn. And the reality of it is that not all, but many people in those communities, their desire is to get out. So if you come in and you equip them and you make them, you know, for lack of better terms, more attractive and more available, that's one of the things that we see all the time. Guys will say, oh, I went in this community, I developed all these leaders. And then 2 years later, 5 years later, they're gone. Yeah, of course now they're gone. Yeah. Because the mark of kind of wealth, whether it's be intellectual or material wealth, is mobility. You can move. And we tend to assume that if you go to these communities like you went to, like I went to, like we've ministered in, that people are just going to stay there. So I can't tell you how many people that came to our church, didn't have a job, were confused about their direction, discerning their gifts. And 3 years later, 5 years into that, now they're in California, they're making 100K a year. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, totally. I'll give you an example. God, I want you to come back and finish. But I was, I married this couple. They were, I mean, just a mess. She was prostitute. She had three different kids, three different men. He was dealing drugs. They were living together. Anyway, they get just radically saved and Jesus just works in their hearts. I marry them. I baptize them later, marry them. And they just, I mean, it's just bring all the mess, but all the beauty of a changed gospel life. And about 6 months later, his name was Bruce. We just sat down and said, Pastor, I said, yeah. He said, we're going to move out of the neighborhood. And I said, no, what happened? He says, you know, this is a really dangerous neighborhood. And I want to say to him, yeah, you were the reason it was a dangerous neighborhood.
Right.
And there's that missiologists call this redemption and lift. When people have a redeemed life, they change lifestyle patterns. They end up doing better in life and, you know, whatever measure you use for that. And they, you know, in this case, they moved away. And it was literally, I felt like we had a train out of the neighborhood for everyone whose life was radically changed. So how do you, the leadership question comes back to here. How do you do it in an under-resourced community like that?
Yeah. And when you and I or someone else finds the answer to that,
yeah,
they're probably not going to be rich because let's be honest, I don't know that a ton of people care about that question.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to be derogative.
No, I get you.
But it's such a rabbit trail. But yeah, and the way I've seen this done is the only way I see this working is someone has to stay. Mm-hmm. And someone has to be committed to this, what I'm about to say right now. They have to be committed that I'm going to stay here long-term, 20, 30 years. And I know that probably 6, 7, 8 out of 10 of the leaders I raise up, the people I raised up, just like you just said, once they become mobile, they're probably going to leave. But the demographic I'm serving will probably never leave. So we have to almost change our metrics, Ed, in terms of like, see, we're very kind of selfish. We want to raise up leaders for us, by us. So I want these leaders for my church. And the reality of it is in some communities, when you raise up leaders, you're really raising up leaders for other places.
Ouch. Ouch. I don't like that.
If you're really kingdom-minded, you kind of have to let that go.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing I would say to this. I would say some will stay. And what that means, I think, is I think it challenges kind of our paradigm, especially when it comes to resources. Because once someone becomes raised up as a leader, sometimes why they leave is because there's better opportunities. Mm-hmm. They're safer neighborhoods. And what that means practically is that if you're going to stay long-term in these neighborhoods, you have to be prepared to offer people the ability to actually make a living in the ministry.
Yeah.
And not do Christianity.com/cheap.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do it that way.
Okay. So your person of color, you're African-American. I wonder some differences related to leadership in your cultural, contextual differences, and what would some of those be that we would want to know as we raise up leaders?
Yeah, well, that's a huge issue.
And but I need you to answer in just about 3 minutes. So just address all the issues. No, I'm just kidding. Take as much time as you need. Take as much time as you need.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of those. One of them I would say is that I think that there's some maybe presuppositions that when you come at it from the outside in, so we've had planters come from the outside, to come to Baltimore. And I think that there's a culture they bring with them of kind of systems and structures. And leadership development is often done in other communities more organically. Mm-hmm. It's still done, but it's not on a spreadsheet, if you know what I mean.
No, no. You're talking about other communities, like outside the Anglo context, it's more organically.
Exactly.
Okay, I gotcha.
Exactly.
Got you.
Yeah. It's still done, but it's done more organically. It's not spreadsheeted. There's no curriculums. There's no start and end date. You know, we don't use words like residencies and, you know, boot camps and trainings and those types of things. So if I had to nail one thing, I would say someone from the outside coming in, delay all judgment for about 3 years. Mm. And people who are on the inside, delay all judgment for about 3 years, because I think both of those cultures, and I think that's what we're dealing with here, is culture, cultural approaches to leadership development. They're merely adaptations of what we're trying to see in scripture and wrestling with it through the lenses of culture. And yeah. I think we can learn from both. So cultures here in Baltimore can learn that systems and structures can actually serve them well and can help them develop leaders more effectively. And cultures from the outside can learn that not everything is a spreadsheet and not everything is a deadline. And sometimes the most effective thing you can do with a person is to do what Jesus did. And that is just flat out spend time with people. Hmm.
You know, I usually don't like interview somebody, but this is so good. I've turned this into an interview rather than a conversation, but I got more. So let's buckle up, folks, for a few more minutes. I want to ask some more questions. There's some real wisdom here that Michael's bringing. How have you found and developed leaders from within your new congregation? What does that look like?
So I am not that smart, and I like things that force me to do some things that I may have emotional or psychological hindrances to. So I stole an idea from some friends of mine that originally reared me in the faith from the Reform perspective. They had something called an advisory ballot. And what I basically did is I took that idea and I looked at Acts 6 and I looked at 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. And I said, you know, what if we had a mechanism in our church that would require or call the church or hold the church accountable to the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. In other words, how can I get the church to participate in leadership development? Not just the pastors, not just the gifted people, hand cherry picking people and putting them in the kind of Navy SEALs ecclesiological training systems, but like, how do we get the church involved? The Act 6. So we have this advisory ballot. We did it every October. We'd hand it out to the church, give them 2 weeks, give them 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, tell them to read those texts and prayerfully consider men and women who they think either are qualified or may be qualified in the future or had potential to lead a ministry or plant a church. What that did was phenomenal, Ed. First of all, it embedded something in the church that forced us and remind us, harvest is plentiful, workers are few, Jesus is ascended, gifts are here. It's not our job to make the gifts, it's to identify them. So every single year, names get written on that ballot. The elders take those names, vet the ballots, vet the people, present them before the people. So what we have is a reoccurring every single year, 3 people, 5 people, 8 people, with all different types of desires for ministries always present. And I've begged church planters and I've begged pastors and I've begged churches. I don't care if you don't do it like this, but by all means, put something in your church rhythm that helps the church to participate. That's just one thing. You can call it affirmation if you don't like ballot because you'll get in a church fight. Call it an affirmation.
I like that. All right. So I know you have some diagnostic questions you use in leadership development. Talk to us about how those questions help you develop leaders.
Well, I gave you two of them.
Yeah, sure. Give me some more.
Diagnostic questions. Say the last part again.
You have some questions that you use in leadership development about, and so how do you use these questions to help develop leaders?
Ah, yes. So I think one of those questions, just pragmatically, we start from the person. Like, hey, what do you want to do? What do you feel like God's called you to do? Another one, if they're married, which can we get your spouse to weigh in on this? Because what we don't want to do is get all the way down the field and realize, oh, we don't have a field goal kicker. You know, they don't even want this happening. And another one too is I really like to lean probably a little bit more heavy than some are comfortable with just flat out desire. Like I like to live there because I think God gives people, men and women, desires and passion. And another one too is I like to try to open up the box, Ed, and ask people, so if you could do anything, what would you want to do? Because sometimes this is how we present leadership development. We have these needs and we need you to fill them. So, you know, some people raise their hands and they jump in those holes and they, you know, try to put the dirt in. But sometimes God puts people in your church and God's trying to meet a need that's not even on your radar. So I like to ask a person, so if you could do anything in the church or anything for the Lord, what would you want to do? In other words, it's kind of like a vehicle for creativity, because I think sometimes our leadership development structures and systems are stifling rather than kind of enabling.
Fascinating. Stifled rather than enabling. Of course, but if you do open up, you know, pathways for new leaders, it can be messy at times. I mean, stuff goes wrong. So what can a pastor dedicated to developing other leaders expect from those they serve and they develop, and how do they deal with some of those failures?
Yeah, volatility. I really believe that some pastors don't do this because they know exactly what you said is true. And they're like, I don't want that. Well, I mean, Jesus faced it in his ministry. The early church faced it. It's fascinating. I started reading through the book of Acts again, and I had this little theme, like the early church was a mess. You know, the first thing the early church dealt with, we always go, oh, it's the Spirit, it's Peter. No, back up. Chapter one, they just finished praying. We had one of our main guys betray our Lord and get him killed. Can we have a meeting about that? That was their first public meeting. We need to replace Judas. Like, I can't imagine any church plant starting like that. We had these two superstar guys, and the one guy killed his wife, and now we need to replace him. Can you imagine? Yeah, come join our church. Like, but what am I saying? I'm saying, like, yeah, when you pursue this, there's going to be volatility. It's going to be loss. There's going to be limitations, pain, discouragement. But in it all, Jesus said, I will build my church. He said, I'm never going to leave you or forsake you. You're going to learn a lot about yourself, and you're going to get the pleasure and the privilege of seeing men and women raised up, equipped, and deployed into the harvest. And you're going to get to look at them. Let me tell you this quick story. I was at our annual meeting and we were leaving lunch, and I had three men walking in front of me. One of those men now leads the church I founded. Another one of those men was planted out of the church I founded. And the man on his right was planted out of that church.
Wow.
I'm walking behind those men. That's what you get when you are intentionally devoted to leadership development. You get to see men and women and people just really do things that God has called them to do. And there's a great joy in that.
Well, folks, you can tell I'm really enjoying this conversation with Michael Crawford. We're going to have him on the next episode. So you want to go ahead and get ready to download episodes. This is 640, 641. Michael will be back. We're going to continue our conversation. If this is helpful to you, as always, leave a note, like, share, all those things you do where you download your podcast, so more people can find out what we're doing and engage in the conversation as well. You've heard us talk about the Church Planting Masterclass before, 80-session video course that's totally free on newchurches.com. We recently dropped two more sections to the Masterclass, one on engaging the lost, people don't know Christ, in your community, and the other on vision with conversations like Mark Middleberg, James Hobson, and others. And of course, I have the privilege of being part of that as well. TED Talk style videos get to the heart of what you need to know as you plant churches. Check out the masterclass for free. That's right. In partnership with the Send Network for free at newchurches.com. Finally, remember, we mentioned at the top of the show, but you should check out Crawford's book, Don't Plant. This, I love the contrarian title here. Don't Plant, Be Planted, A Contrarian's Guide to Starting a Church. It's available on Amazon, other retailers, and of course, linked at the show notes for episode 640 here on the New Churches Podcast. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to rate and review us, or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources and to participate in the Church Planning Masterclass, visit newchurches.com.